Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an X-Tuesday episode. Today, I'm going to be talking about a couple of X-Men books I've read recently. We're kicking it off with X-23 number 10. This is from writer Mariko Tamaki. We have pencils by Diego Olortiga, inks by Walden Wong, colors by Chris O'Halloran, with letters by Corey Petit. So, for those not familiar with what's been going on in X-23 so far, Laura has basically been hanging out with her sister slash clone Gabby, Honey Badger, and together they've been looking for other remnants of Wolverine genetic material, right? So at this time, when this came out in 2019, Wolverine's dead, even though there are seemingly any number of clones of him running around. There's Dakin, there's X-23, there's Honey Badger, there's, you know, Old Man Logan. There's all these different versions of him. It's like he never left. We had more Wolverine than ever. But based on the origin of X-23, the fact she was cloned from Wolverine and was supposed to be this weapon designated X-23, that's where she got her name. And that's why she kept the name, to always remind herself that she needs to go out and make sure that anybody else who's a clone of Wolverine is freed and doesn't spend their life as a weapon. You know, that's why she freed Gabby. And their relationship's interesting when you think about it, because really the relationship they have, it's Laura trying to give Gabby a good life, despite the fact they're both clones of Wolverine and both live sort of a violent life, but trying to give her a happier childhood than she had, you know, locked in the cell, only let out when she was pointed at something to kill. So in this current storyline, Laura and Gabby were basically investigating some murders that were going on. They were helping the NYPD, and they came across another clone of themselves, but this time an imperfect clone with cybernetic enhancements, but it didn't have a healing factor. So they tried to get through to it. They weren't able to. They took it back to the X-Mansion, and Beast was doing some tests on it, trying to get through to it. And then they found out that a signal was being sent, trying to reboot it and bring it back online. And the signal was coming from a place called Medextronics. And so X-23 heads over there to find out what's going on. So that's where this issue 10 starts. And what happens is Laura comes face to face with a bunch of these cybernetically enhanced clones, as well as Dr. Robert Chandler, who was one of the main guys at Alchemex, who was in charge of the cloning program that created X-23 in the first place. And, you know, he's showed up before in the all-new Wolverine series from Tom Taylor. They definitely have history. And when Laura shows up there at Medextronics, Chandler says, "Oh, X-23, welcome to the future of cybertronic weapons. I've been meaning to thank you. You did me a favor." And she's like, "What, when I crippled you?" Because we know he's got cybernetic legs, because X-23, when she escaped, or last time she saw him, she damaged him or wounded him pretty spectacularly. So Chandler actually says, "Yeah, you did help me out by crippling me, because you gave me time to think. I thought about all the mistakes I made, where I went wrong in creating this ultimate weapon, and what you did, your actions, it inspired this innovation." And he points to, you know, just the dozens and dozens of cybernetic clones behind him. Said, "Along with a little luck, do you want to know what this is? This is planned obsolescence." So what he tells her is that he has created more clones of her as assassins, and they're designed to fight and complete their mission, but then die, basically. He says a soldier shouldn't survive past its purpose. So it's good for the client, it's better for the manufacturer. You know, you send it out, it destroys whatever it needs to destroy. It's destroyed itself, kind of like getting rid of the evidence. And so Laura's like, "So you did it on purpose. You shredded the X gene so that they don't have the healing factor." And he's like, "Nah, the DNA was already damaged, but like I said, it was lucky. So it all worked out for me, you know, I'm a genius." And Laura's like, "Wow, you know what? I'm pretty sick of listening to geniuses like you. You know, I could give a whole speech about it, but I'd rather just end this." And Chandler's got a big smile on his face. He says, "Yeah, thanks. You know, you're giving me a chance to erase past mistakes. And it's going to be great to see these new models take apart the old one. I never should have created you in the first place. And Laura's like, you think your disposable army can take me down? You know, go right ahead. And Chandler's like, well, I think my advantage is, you know, mass production. And he hits a button on his phone and all of these dozens and dozens of cybernetically enhanced clones of Laura Kinney start attacking her. And she's like, oh man, this may be even too many for me. Because there's just so many of them that the sheer weight of them kind of overwhelms her. So she gets tackled, and as much as she has the healing factor to kind of help her, she's worried that she might not make it. But luckily, Honey Badger and the previous clone that they cybernetic clone, the first cybernetic clone that they had found and discovered, they both show up. And Honey Badger's yelling, give me back my sisters, because Honey Badger has managed to get through to the cybernetic clone that they had captured. And so between the three of them, they're sort of able to take out these dozens of cybernetically enhanced Lauras. Meanwhile, what Laura wants to know is, where's Chandler, right? She wants to stop any of this from happening in the future. It's her mission. It's not enough to stop clones of her or to rescue clones of her or to set them on the right path. She's got to stop these sort of experiments and new clones from being created by taking out the people that are creating them. So she yells to Gabby, what is she doing here? And Gabby's like, well, she's helping us not get shredded into tiny pieces. So this is a lot of us, you know? And so Laura's like, well, we can kill all these cybernetic clones of us, but it doesn't stop without stopping him. So you guys hold him off. I'm going after Chandler. So Chandler heads up to the roof to a helicopter, and there's a couple of cybernetic clones with him. He says, okay, if anything appears on the roof, destroy it. And meanwhile, Honey Badger and the first cybernetic clone have taken out the last of the models that Chandler had set after them. And Gabby's like, man, this is maybe the weirdest family reunion I've ever had. And the cybernetic clones don't talk, but she kind of points to something on her chest, and she's not really sure what she means. And then she points up to the control room, and she gets launched up there. And they say, okay, we need to figure out what exactly is going on here in this control room. What information can we find to make sure that none of these clones can be created anymore? Meanwhile, Laura has reached the roof. She takes out the two clones that are up there and is headed for the helicopter to stop Chandler. Meanwhile, back in the control room, Gabby's talking to the first cybernetic clone that sort of switched sides. And she's really kind of happy about how they've taken out all the other clones. But then the cybernetic clone kind of collapses, and she's like, wow, what's going on? And when she pulls her hand away from her side, she sees how damaged she really is. Because again, these cybernetic clones don't have the healing factor. And Gabby's worried, saying, okay, we can fix it. Beast will help us. And again, the cybernetic clone taps on her chest, and Gabby's like, I don't understand. And she takes over to the computers and starts kind of showing her, because apparently these cybernetic clones don't talk either. So meanwhile, Chandler's managed to take off in the helicopter, but Laura has leapt up and grabbed onto the skid, and he's trying to prevent Dr. Chandler from getting away. So in the control room, even though she can't talk, the cybernetic clone kind of scratches out a message for Gabby on the control panel there, and shows Gabby where the switch is. There's a button that's labeled T-U-O-K-S, and Gabby gives her a hug, saying it's not fair. It should be fair for all of the us's. And we see the cybernetic clone take off and manages to leap up, you know, with the help of the enhancements that it has. It leaps up, even though the helicopter is far above the building at this point, and grabs onto the skid. And we're told there's 1 minute and 30 seconds left, while we see the cybernetic clones that Gabby and the original cybernetic clone had been able to take out. They've recovered, and they're basically forming a human mountain to climb up and get to the control room where Gabby is. So Gabby's counting down. She's saying there's 60 seconds. This isn't fair. She doesn't even have a name, and you're over. And then we see what the original cybernetic clone has scratched into the control panel for Gabby. We now understand what the TUOKS stands for, and that's an acronym that is on the chest of every one of these cybernetic clones. And what it stands for is Total Unit Operations Kill Switch. So as the original cybernetic clone reaches the helicopter, and her and Laura manage to punch through the canopy, and they have a hold of Dr. Chandler. They're grabbing on him. And before Laura can pull him out, the cybernetic clone looks over at her, grabs her by the collar, and throws her off of the helicopter, with Laura saying, no, what are you doing? And Chandler's trying to do an override, a vocal override, saying, assassin protocol, stop. But it's too late for anything of that nature to happen, even though this cybernetic clone can't technically kill Dr. Chandler because he's got safeguards built in. Once Gabby hits the button, all of the clones, all of the cybernetic clones, they all explode. So that causes Chandler's helicopter to crash and explode, whether he's really dead or not. I guess time will tell. But it also solves the problem of having to deal with these dozens and dozens of cybernetic clones. They don't have a healing factor. They shouldn't be coming back. They all explode. And Gabby and Laura have solved the case and solved the problem. And we see them at home a little later, and they're talking about what happened. And Laura's saying, you know, the kill switch was additional insurance, and all of them were compromised. It was some kind of hemophilia issue, tissue damage, and, you know, they weren't able to heal. And Gabby's like, yeah, I guess that's what she was trying to tell me, you know, and why she sacrificed herself, because she knew she was going to die anyway. And Laura's like, yeah, maybe that's so, but there is still a significant portion of Chandler's research out there. A lot of his data was missing. And so, you know, there's still work for us to do. Gabby's like, yeah, that's probably true. But that cybernetic clone that befriended us, you know, she was awesome. And she only got to be awesome like a week or so. And that's not cool. She deserved better than that. So we see that there's a few items on the table, and it looks like Honey Badger may be inspired by the look of the cybernetic clone to maybe make a new outfit. And she starts kind of scratching something on some paper on the table. And that's how the issue ends. So it's a good story. I like Mariko Tamaki's take on the relationship between Laura Linney, X-23, and Gabby. You know, I mean, really, when you talk about it, the interactions between the cybernetic clone that couldn't talk and didn't have the healing factor, that's a version of Laura. And then we have the actual version of Laura, X-23. And then we have this, you know, young teenage version of Laura, who is Honey Badger. They're all the same person, technically, right? They're all clones of each other, but they each have their own sort of unique attributes and characteristics. And I like that. You know, I like how Laura is so aware of that even though she's talking to these other beings, they're all sort of connected to her and a part of her, and she feels responsible for them. She certainly feels responsible for Gabby, you know, calls her sister, tries to protect her and give her the best child she can, like I was saying before, as a way to sort of make up for the fact that she herself didn't get to have a very good childhood. So I love that that's explored throughout the whole run of Mariko Tamaki's. It's maybe not as formative for who Laura is as a character as Tom Taylor's run was on All New Wolverine. Taylor really sort of established who Laura was and is, but Tamaki's certainly building off that and giving it nuance and fleshing it out. So the art is pretty solid. When we first started the series, it was Juan Cabal, and I vastly preferred his artwork to everybody else who's been on since. It's been kind of a rotating series of artists, it seems like, ever since Juan's first arc. That's not to say that this art is bad by any means. It's really quite good. The line work is just a little thicker than I'm used to seeing with Juan's art, but it's great. The color work A lot of times it'll go monochromatic or dichromatic to sort of emphasize particular panels, but I think that works as well. And yeah, the art, if anything, if I had any complaint about the art, it does feel just a little bit stiff. And I think that is because the line weights are a little heavier than what we've seen in the past from artists who've worked on X23, but it's still really great art. And the other thing about X23 is it's had really great covers from the entire time, whether that be the Ashley Witter cover, like the one that's on this issue and a lot of the issues of this arc, or early on, we had a lot of Mike Cho variants. Those were great as well. So it's a solid run. If you haven't checked out Mariko Tamaki's X23, I would recommend giving it a try. All right, let me move on to the next book I'm going to talk about. It's The Uncanny X-Men Winter's End. And this is basically a one-shot from writer Sina Grace with art by Nathan Stockman, colors by Frederico Blee, and letters by Joe Sabino that give this creative team a chance to wrap up the story that was being told in the Iceman ongoing series that was also written by Sina Grace. So, you know, Bobby being one of the original X-Men, and then recently Marvel decided to kind of out him as a homosexual. And Bobby had been in the closet and been in denial for many, many years. And I don't know, I always kind of felt like Bobby, he had untapped potential. It's like Marvel didn't really know what to do with him, right? Like Angel had, you know, the money, and he was kind of a playboy and had a little bit of angst, and Beast, you know, was really smart and had the whole crisis of identity with sometimes he was looked human and then he had blue fur and, you know, all that kind of thing. And Cyclops is always wrestling with leadership and responsibility and kind of came off as sort of hall monitor, single dimension. And then, you know, Jean Grey was probably the most interesting one, having all these boys that had crushes on her. And then Chris Claremont bringing in the whole Phoenix saga and what that did and having her die and come back from the dead several times. But it never seemed like they knew what to do with Bobby. He was kind of the jokester and, you know, the prankster of the group, and he never took anything seriously. But there was nothing to really sink your teeth into. I mean, if anything, the four-issue Iceman miniseries from back in the 80s tried to show us that his parents really didn't get the whole mutant thing, and that added a little dimension to him. But even that, it just didn't seem like they knew what to do. Now, making him a homosexual, I don't know that I would have thought that was the way to go, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because you're sort of retconning this and going back and looking in context at other stories with Bobby, even though they weren't written with that subtext in mind, it still works for the character. So it's actually a brilliant idea to change Bobby this way. And I think it does make him a more interesting character. It brings in a lot of other sort of aspects and things to explore. And that's what Sina Grace, the writer, has been doing. But I think Iceman got canceled. The regular series got canceled. And then the trade, if I remember this correctly, the trade sold like Blockbuster. So they brought it back just for a little while. But then we know that Jonathan Hickman's House of X and Powers of 10 and Dawn of X were all being planned. And before that, we had the big X-Men disassembled storyline that was then had the Age of X-Man event. So there was all that kind of stuff going on, all that planning and whatnot. So it makes sense that it would get canceled again, not necessarily due to, you know, the quality of the story or the sales or lack thereof, but because all the X-Men related titles were all getting canceled at this time. So everything could be consolidated down into just that one X-Men, Uncanny X-Men title rather, that was telling the X-Men disassembled storyline that would then feed into Age of X-Man. And then that would go into House of X, Powers of 10. But this creative team didn't really get a chance to end their story, right? At least not on the way they wanted to. So to Marvel's credit, they did give them a chance to sort of tie it all up with this Uncanny X-Men Winter's End story. And even though this came out during a time when the Age of X-Man books were coming out, there is an editor's note that says that all the events that happen in this particular story all happen before the X-Men disassembled storyline. So it starts off In Delaware, there's a bunch of flooding going on, and Iceman has created a bunch of ice golems, and he's helping to rescue a bunch of people in the suburbs, carrying them through the water. And one of his golems gets a brick thrown at it and smashes its head, and he's like, what the heck's going on? And there's this bigot standing on top of his roof saying, "We didn't ask for help, Mutie. You want to come and play hero from the big city? And next thing you know, you're going to be moving in and taking our jobs and blah, blah, blah." And just, you know, spewing the kind of right-wing nonsense and garbage that these fools, you know, always do, not looking at reality and just being angry for the sake of being angry and close-minded and just ridiculous. But I love it. Like, the old Bobby would have engaged, would have, you know, argued with him, whatever. And he just runs off. He just slides off. And the guy's even like, "Oh, you too chicken to hear the truth?" And Bobby's like, "You know what, man? Go say whatever you want. I got a birthday party to attend." And he just leaves. And that's the best way to really handle those kind of people, you know? Just don't even give them the time of day. They're not even important enough to listen to. So Bobby heads back to the city. It is his birthday. He got a book from Judah Miller, an old friend. And as he's standing there, supposed to be nobody else in the mansion, but as he's standing there looking at the mail, he hears this noise, comes running to the other room, book over his head, because the book that he got from Judah, it was, "Oh, the Places You'll Go" from Dr. Seuss. So he's holding the book over his head. "Who's there? I'm going to make a love a mutant. I have no time for games." But it turns out it's just another of the students. And she says, "Oh, Mr. Drake, I was just going to leave your birthday present here and like quit the X-Men." And Bobby's like, "You're not actually an X-Men. You're a student." And so he sits down with Michaela and she starts talking about how she hates to be a whiner, but she feels like she has no impact. She has no agency. Everybody calls her Spit Girl. And the best thing she's been able to do with her projectile saliva is style her own hair. Bobby's like, "Ew, that's gross." And he's right, it is. And she's like, "And I don't even know like what I'm doing here." And so Bobby's saying, "You know, I used to kind of feel the same way. Like I felt like I wasn't cool and I acted like I didn't matter. But, you know, the truth is you only know peak me. For years I was in the background and I was scared and I felt like I wasn't seen. You know, you just have to find a way to get through that." And so Michaela's friend shows up and says, "Hey, I thought you said there were some shoes I can borrow." And she says, "Okay, let me go. But before I forget, Bobby, here, Mr. Drake, here's your present. You know, I wish it was more inventive, but this whole leaving the X-Men thing has hit me hard." He's like, "Again, you're not in the X-Men." And what she's given him is a little Frosty the Snowman ornament. So anyway, Bobby leaves, heading for the party. He says, "Thanks again for the gift. I'll see you later." When his future self, Ice Master, shows up and says, "I don't have much time left. I returned from the future to warn you of a darkness yet to come. I won't let us be the reason the galaxy ends." And Bobby's like, "Wait, what?" So meanwhile, at the Java Ago, the coffee shop, they're having a party. There's a bunch of the X-Men there. We see Angel and Kitty Pryde and Rogue and Storm, and they're all waiting for Bobby to show up to celebrate his birthday. And Bobby's parents show up and they're like, "Oh man, here we go." Like I mentioned before, in the miniseries, Iceman miniseries in the 80s, we kind of learned that Bobby's parents don't have the easiest time with the fact that he's a mutant. They're very Midwestern, they're very conservative. And it's hard for them to deal with that, with Bobby's abilities and the world that he kind of lives in. So meanwhile, back in Central Park, Bobby's confronting Ice Master saying, "You know, you're not really me from a dark future timeline." He says like, I am. Your gut knows I am." He's like, "You know what? Whatever, dude. I haven't even grown a beard yet because this Ice Master has a long beard and long hair." And it's like, "Look, I've forgotten how much I used to like the back and forth banter, but I really don't have time for that. You need to listen to me because if not, it's not going to lead to a better tomorrow." So he starts explaining to him what's happened. And basically in the future, Bobby has started a relationship with Dakin, who's Wolverine's son, who's always been a bad guy, but sometimes on the side of angels and whatever. And long story short, Dakin basically fools Bobby into helping him sort of battle the Shi'ar and do some other kind of things that supposedly are for the good of the planet, but eventually leads to the death of a lot of X-Men. And Dakin has actually formed an alliance with Deathbird, double crosses the X-Men, double crosses Bobby, ends up double crossing Deathbird. And eventually is able to gain control of the nexus of all realities, which gives Dakin what he always wanted, which is power that kind of elevates him up to a Thanos level player in the cosmos. And this future version of Bobby, this Ice Master, blames himself for that. So he's come back to the past to make sure that that won't happen. And it almost seems like, you know, and the current Bobby's like, well, that's not, that stuff's not going to happen. What you're saying is absolutely ludicrous. And it's been fun, but I really think you should head back to your own time now. And the future Bobby's like, I can't let this happen. And if you won't listen to me, then my only option may be to take you out. Cause I'm not going to leave this world, not going to leave this time, knowing that you're going to make the same mistakes that I made. So there's a big battle between the two of them. They both create ice golems. They're both going back and forth using their powers in different ways, which is a great thing that they've done with Iceman in recent years, where they have elevated his powers to the point where he can do things like make ice golems and inhabit ice golems. And, you know, he is the Omega level mutant when it comes to ice powers. There's nobody that has better ice powers than him. So that stuff's pretty cool as well. Meanwhile, we check in at the party and we see various characters from the Iceman solo series that show up. And again, it's just a way for Cena Grace to tie up a lot of loose ends. As some of them are showing up, everybody's wondering, where the heck's Bobby? You know, he should have been here by now. So Jean Grey says, I'm going to go check the X-Mansion. And, you know, as she heads there, obviously she sees this fight that's happening right outside between this future Iceman and the past Iceman. And the future one is mad, you know, saying, Jean Grey, how dare you show your face here? We wouldn't even have known about the Shi'ar Mechron crystal if it weren't for you. And people wouldn't have known about my secret of my sexual preference. And, you know, you always come back from the dead and you're always forgiven. And Jean Grey's like, Bobby, what is going on here? And the future Bobby's like, you know what you did. And present Bobby's like, stop. And he throws up a big ice wall between the two of them. And he's like, she's been dead like forever. You don't know what you're talking about. And Eugene, I'll be damned if another version of me is going to get to say this to you. And she's like, what are you talking about? She goes, look, Time displaced Jean, or Bobby actually says, time displaced Jean did a very bad thing. She's the one that you know, basically spilled the beans about my sexual preference. And I thought I could let it go. But since this guy brought it up, and future Bobby sees the look on present Bobby's face, is like, I think I'm going to stay out of this one. So that's kind of a cool moment. But Bobby says his piece. He's like, look, you outed me. Teen Jean outed me. And current Jean says, well, yeah, when those original X-Men that were time displaced returned to their time, I gained all their memories and I remember what happened. Bobby says, okay, well, you got to know that wasn't okay. It did need to happen, but because you did it the way you did it, you took away my power of choice and I wasn't ready. And she tries to apologize and Bobby's like, it's just muddy water under the bridge at this point. And, you know, I feel like I've been dealing with all this stuff for the past month. And then I got all my memories back from my, you know, younger self when they went back, and I just, you know, I have those memories of coming out of the closet in my teens and falling in love and all that and sacrificing to save the time stream, but I didn't actually live any of that, which brings me back to you. He confronts his future self again. He's like, look, you're coming here and you're telling me what to do with my life because your faith got shaken because you made a mistake and let a bad guy win once. Like, why aren't you back in your timeline doing everything to stop him? Because this is over here, right? Like, Jean just, you know, she becomes Dark Phoenix and she eats the whole solar system and she shrugs it off and we just say, it was just Jean being Jean, you know, claiming her own femininity. And then Cyclops gets catfished by a clone of her and still marries it. And then he mind cheats on her and sets off years of chaos, and everybody always gets a pass. Everybody always gets forgiven. I even forgive everybody involved. Everybody gets forgiven, but I never forgive myself. Even future me can't forgive myself for doing whatever I did with Dakin. So I'm done with this whole self-hating Irish Catholic guilt trip melodrama. Like, I never want the timeline you laid out to happen ever. But even if I do make mistakes, just let me make them. Let me live my whole life. And Bobby, in this cathartic moment of realization, he basically stops it from happening right then by saying, I'm done with this self-hating. So apparently that means this relationship with Dakin won't ever happen. So there's like this flash, and they realize that the future has indeed been changed. And a future Ice Master Bobby Drake's like, okay, fine, yeesh. And Gene's like, well, what now? He's like, oh, it's my birthday. I want to celebrate. Let's head to the party. So they head to the party. And again, there's a lot of little moments that happen here between Bobby and various characters. And it goes back to just, these are loose ends from the series that Cena Grace gets to sort of tie up. And so it's great that Marvel gave him a chance to come and sort of give this closure to the series. We see some really poignant moments with Bobby between his parents and some of the other X-Men like Bishop and Jean and some other of the Morlocks that they had things going on with them in that series. And so it ends up being a really great issue in terms of closure for Bobby. And even with what happens with Ice Master, who was also a character in the series who had showed up. So I'm not going to get too much into it, because if you didn't read the Iceman series, it's not going to make much sense to you. And if you did read it and haven't read Winter's End, you really need to go and pick up Winter's End, because it's going to give you closure like it needs to. So I thought it was a really great way to end. And more than anything, the fact that Cena got to do it and end it on his own terms. And there's even a letter at the end from Cena where he talks about getting to wrap it all up and how grateful he is for Marvel allowing him to do that, and how grateful he is for the co-creators he got to work with on the series. So I do recommend the Iceman series. Like I said, the changes that Marvel made to Iceman, I know some people cried about them just doing it diversity for diversity's sake. And like I said, it may not have been the way that I would have gone had I been the one making the decisions, but you can't deny that it works for the character, and it's made him a lot more interesting. And I think it was a great change. Like when I first heard about it, I didn't know how to feel about it. I was like, I don't know. Like retcons are always kind of dicey. And the biggest part for me is that oftentimes I feel like they don't make sense. You have a hard time reconciling them with the way the character used to act or the way the character used to be or certain events. But that's what's so great about certain retcons that do work. And this is one that does, because if you change things and it still makes perfect sense, you're adding to the character without going back and invalidating or changing any of the old stories. And in fact, you can be bringing more meaning to the old stories. So I'm always real appreciative of that. So that's going to do it for this episode of a bonus episode, if you will, of X Tuesday. As always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Be sure you check out our Wednesday Kickstarter Spotlight episode this week with Liam Sharp talking about the unseen Jack Katz. Jack Katz is a creator who's been working in comics for just decades and decades. His career spans 8 decades, in fact, that he's been working in comics. And a lot of people don't know his name. I didn't know his name until just recently, but his work is just astounding. And Liam befriended him a few years ago, was a big fan of his work as well. And Liam, while visiting Jack at his home one day, just found this treasure trove of unpublished work. And we're just getting a small amount of this in this hardcover. And the fact that we get to celebrate this and this work of Jack's and also get him some money. I mean, the guy's 93 years old. He lives on a fixed income. So this really helps him out to be able to keep creating and have some financial peace of mind. And you know, so many of the creators we celebrate from his era after they're gone, you know, Jack Kirby's birthday always gets mentioned, and Kurt Swan's birthday and things like that. But the fact that Jack's here and we can celebrate his work while he's still with us is just amazing. So be sure you go and check out that episode with Liam. He gives all the details. And even if you're not able to pledge or the art just isn't for you, at least share it on social media, because we want to be sure to get the word out as wide as possible. So everybody who does want to contribute and does want a copy of this incredible hardcover is able to get one, and we can get the most money possible to help Jack out. So be sure you go and check that out. So again, thanks everybody for the support as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.